The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, before I formally introduce our panel, we want to bring you just a quick report. Up to 100 asylum seekers who queued outside the International Protection Office last night were told there's no accommodation available. Some of the men ended up staying in tents in a park in Bowles Bridge overnight. And our chief reporter, Barry White, spoke to some of them outside the IPO yesterday evening before they made their way to accommodation in tents somewhere. Have a listen.
Dawood Suleiman, I am from Pakistan. I'm coming like 1 month before, more than 1 month I was in prison. Then I come, they send me a desk, you go there for asylum. When I came here, they said we don't have anything. I'm just waiting 2 days. Like I'm coming yesterday in the morning, but I'm still waiting. I don't have a food, don't have accommodation, so we don't know where we sleep, so it's a big problem.
So do you know where you will stay tonight?
No, we don't know, seriously, we don't know where we're going tonight now.
And you only arrived in Ireland, did you say, 2 days ago?
No, I was coming like 1.5 months before, but when I come in airport, they're going to send me in prison. So after yesterday I released from Clover Hill remand.
So you arrived here in April and you were in prison?
March. Yes.
Why were you in prison?
I don't know. He said you don't have a document, something. So they sent me in prison, Clover Hill remand. You know?
So you were in Clover Hill. You've now been released and you're now trying to get asylum?
Yes, but I cannot find anything.
When they said they put you in prison because you didn't have the right documents?
Yes, that's why he sent me. I was there 6 weeks sentence. Then yesterday I completed my sentence.
Was it you had no passport when you arrived?
Yes, I don't have a passport when I came.
You're new enough to here, as you say, you only get out of Clover Hill. Do you almost wish you were back in prison because you'd have a bed?
Prison is better than this, seriously. We have a bed, food, everything, but I'm just thinking maybe we're going to back in prison. Prison is better than this situation.
My name is Ghafouri from Afghanistan. They told us only we give you 1 night accommodation. After that, we don't have place for you for night or day. We don't have anything to eat because our card that they give us, it's not valid right now. Maybe after 1 week, it will be valid. For now, we don't have anything.
Where will you sleep tonight?
I don't know. Maybe here. We will decide to stay here.
Just here on Mount Street, Upper Mount Street or Lower Mount Street?
Yes, we don't have any place because...
The Gardaí, the Irish police, have said that anybody who stays here will be prosecuted. Are you not afraid to stay here?
We don't know what happened tonight, but we decided to stay here.
You arrived in Ireland 4 days ago. How did you arrive here? Did you come via Northern Ireland?
Yes, we came by that way to Dublin, yes.
Why did you come that way?
Because we don't have another way to come here.
There's Dublin Airport?
No. By ship.
Oh, you came by boat. And were you living in the UK before you came here?
Yes.
How long did you live there?
چند ماه اونجا بودیم.
یک دو سه ماه بودیم دیگه روان میکرد.
2-3 months.
Are asylum seekers like you leaving the UK, are they afraid of this Rwanda policy?
We listen that news, but exactly we don't have information what will be happen there, but we listen that news.
Why are people not applying for asylum in the UK now and choosing to come to Ireland?
Because there is the rule is very difficult there, and they cannot give us legal document. And we saw the people for a long time, they stay there, but still now they don't have legal document. They waiting for that.
All right, that's a report from Barry White talking to some of the immigrants who could not get accommodation and fetched up again at IPASS on Mount Street. I'm joined here in the Shelburne for our Friday forum by Neil Richmond, Minister of State with responsibility for financial services, credit unions, insurance, Fine Gael TD in Dublin, Ona Brin, Sinn Féin TD also in the Dublin area, and Sinead O'Carroll, editor of the journal.ie. Good morning and welcome to you both. Neil Richmond, what is going on?
Well, I think it's quite clear what's going on.
No, but I mean, you clear up the place, and then they just come back.
And that's understandable. People will come back to the International Protection Office, but we've made it quite clear that illegal encampments there are not going to happen again. It's not good for the people who've been camping there, first and foremost. These are human beings we're talking about. It's not good for the people who live in the area, and it's not a way to process efficiently. So instead, what we've taken is we moved over 235 people at the start of the week to accommodation in Cruxling and in City West and others to Swords, and we'll consistently do that. We'll provide accommodation where we have it. Otherwise, unfortunately, we have to refer people to the homeless services.
Owen, what's your reaction to this?
Well, first of all, nobody should be sleeping in tents on our streets. Nobody chooses to. And the reason it happens is because of a failure of government to plan. On any given night, we'll have up to 100 people experiencing homelessness, sleeping rough in tents and in other places. And obviously we now have somewhere between 100 and 200, depending on the day. My big concern is that for 2 years we've been talking about this. For 2 years, government has been promising to put in place a plan, one, to tackle the homelessness crisis, and two, to ensure that people who come to our country seeking international protection are provided with adequate temporary accommodation while their claims are being assessed. There's no evidence of that plan. The government simply doesn't
have... To be frank, Owen, and I don't like to cut in on...
Let me make the point, Neil. All of the evidence shows on both of those fronts the government doesn't have a plan, and in my view doesn't have a plan that is working to meet the temporary accommodation needs of those people who need it the most, whether it's people experiencing homelessness or men, women, and in some cases teenagers yesterday seeking international protection.
Okay, but let's be quite clear, because Owen has talked about evidence, but the evidence shows that over the last 2 years, the government has accommodated over 100,000 refugees, be it from Ukraine or asylum seekers. They've had a consistent plan and have taken a number of measures in terms of the accommodation of people, in terms of increasing rapidly processing times, the allocations, and indeed there was an updated plan agreed by Cabinet on the 27th of March. So all this rhetoric of saying there's no plan and there's evidence that there's no plan, but then when you actually produce the plan or you show the evidence that over 100,000 people are accommodated, what is happening on Main Street? What has happened in Main Street consistently is absolutely wrong. Don't get me wrong. One person on a street in Ted is wrong.
But Neil, will you address the question of whether or not people are asylum shopping? In other words, Rishi Sunak says you're going to Rwanda if you stay here, so off you go. And he is seemingly quite delighted with the fact that they're going to Ireland.
Well, I think the polls closed last night in England in the local elections at 10 o'clock. And what we've seen from the British government for the last week is something that I think myself and Owen can agree on this, something that we're very used to over the last 8 years. When there is a political difficulty in the UK, Ireland is an easy punching bag. And the whole point of Rwanda wasn't to encourage people to go to Ireland. It was to stop people going to the UK because they made the disastrous decision.
Yeah, but they did this week, in advance of the local elections, they made it very public that they were going to round people up. I mean, I don't even like the sound of that, that they had snatch squads going and in, picking people up and threatening them with Rwanda. The only person who went to Rwanda at a cost, we heard earlier, of 140 grand was one volunteer.
And it was completely separate to the scheme that was set up. But what we have seen is that the UK made the disastrous decision to leave the EU because they said they could go it alone. And what has happened? The level of people coming to the UK has absolutely soared. So in the week of an election, they ramp up the rhetoric. They say Rwanda is working, when to be honest, it's just blatant naked polishing with human lives. This isn't straight bananas and sea potatoes. This is people we're talking
about. Sinead, this is a terrible situation that you have ordinary human beings with all the human needs camping on the streets. Now, we have our own homeless people who sometimes choose to be homeless. They don't go into hostels. They would be a relatively small number. Here we're talking about hundreds of people camping on makeshift tents on one of our main streets in the centre of the city.
Yeah, and I think when you're kind of criticising the British government for using rhetoric that's not helpful, things like illegal encampments puts blame on people who are there rather than putting blame on the situation that has led them there. We hear very little about why we have so many more people coming. Some of that is from the prolonged crises, the prolonged wars across the world in subcontinent Africa, in Gaza. Like, a lot of the men who are in Mount Street are from Afghanistan, a place that we have almost virtually forgotten about. And so when you hear people who don't have passports, you know, the Taliban aren't giving people documents or passports when they're trying to flee them in Afghanistan. So I think they're the kind of conversations we should be hearing from our elected representatives to explain to people that this is some of the crises. And when we hear terms like asylum shopping, the UK aren't offering asylum at the moment. They're offering a one-way that what they want is a one-way ticket to Rwanda. They're not saying, they keep saying it's for processing, but it's for processing, and if you are accepted, you stay in Rwanda. So that's not exactly asylum, like, and it is not lawful. They've pushed it through their own courts, but, you know, it has been fought every step
Does
of the way.
Rishi Sunak have any point in, you know, when we say if they come from the UK where they perhaps lived for quite a while? One of the chaps we heard the other day had a Scottish accent. He'd been living in Scotland for so long. He spoke English with a Scottish accent. And they're coming here, and Rishi Sunak says, well, France won't accept the people back when we try to say these people arrived from your territory in boats, we're giving them back to you. France says no, because obviously France is in the EU and UK is not. Doesn't he have a point that when Ireland says we're going to give you back the people who should properly be in the UK?
Well, I think this is where our representatives and our leadership have to be strong in not allowing themselves to be pulled into this kind of argument. The Calais-France thing was obvious the minute they started talking about Brexit, that is what was going to happen. They wanted to take control of their borders. So obviously France weren't going to continue to do what they were doing for the UK's borders. So this was obvious this was going to happen. Dermot Farrador has a really good piece in the Irish Times today explaining that there has always been quietude around the common travel area. Like, it has always been something that everyone has known. We can't police it. We don't want to border it. The two authorities have always had to work together to figure out how to do it and do it in a way that's pragmatic and practical and not have people standing up in the Dáil or whatever. Very strangely, people who absolutely do not want to border on this island talking about how this needs to be closed in some ways. Like, some of the things that have been heard this week has been pulled into the electioneering and posturing of the British Tory party in ways that is quite astounding for people who have usual good political astuteness.
So, Owen, what is to be done? We're not going to police our borders. I mean, there were reports earlier in the week that 100 Gardaí were going to be deployed on anti-immigration strategies, and the suggestion was in the border area. Then it became clear that they weren't going to be put on the border. They weren't going to be stopping buses and checking people for ID, and that is fraught in itself, because you're not entitled to really ask anyone who you are, where you're going in a free travel area. What is to be done?
Sure, and I agree with Sinead. We neither can nor want to have a border on the island of Ireland, and we need to ensure that both free movement north and south, the common travel area, and free movement within the European Union continue. So that means we need to get the system here in this jurisdiction right. And there are many reasons why people might come from one country to another and claim asylum. Some of those will be very, very valid reasons. Some of those may not. And the system here needs to assess those claims from those people in a fair manner. They need to do it in an efficient manner for everybody that's there. And then if somebody does have a legitimate claim, they're provided with asylum here. And if not,
is there any limit? Because people are saying it's not that we're a small, we have no room. We have plenty of room. We don't have plenty of rooms. We have a medical service, but perhaps not an adequate medical service for the numbers of people who are coming in, be they Ukrainian or from any other part of the world that has conflict. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not geared up for an extra 100,000 people arriving in from wherever they come in terms of education, medicine, housing. We're just not geared up for that. We never expected it.
Well, first of all, not only did we expect it, but we were told...
Ukraine was not on anyone's agenda.
Be very clear, not only did we expect it, but government made it very clear, and I'm not criticising them for this, that we could have between 100 and 250,000 Ukrainians when that particular war started. We've also seen over the last number of years the number of people claiming international protection increase. It's not increasing dramatically in real terms, but it has been increasing. So the real issue is how you plan for that. And again, I make the point that whether it's education services, whether it's decent quality temporary accommodation, whether it's health services, if you know over a period of time or if you're expecting a particular number of people, men, women and children, to come to the country, you put in place a plan to deal with that, a plan that is fair, a plan that is efficient, and a plan that's enforced. And that's something we haven't seen over the last number of years.
And a part of that plan is how to communicate it and how to talk. So we've had a lot of correcting over the last 48 hours about how these people are human beings, and that's really, really welcome. But that wasn't there last week or the week before that. So we've got to a situation where that communications plan has allowed, instead of, like, a lot of people wanted to talk about direct provision, how it wasn't working, how the system was too slow, not good enough for the people who were coming, not good enough for the areas where direct provision centres were set up. But no one wanted to have that conversation. This conversation then got kickstarted on the terms of people who set fire to buildings and who rioted in Dublin in November last year. So the communications around this have been led by people who are anti-immigration, And in a lot of ways, and people want to deny this, but there is a lot of racism attached. Not all the time. I think there was a quote in the Irish Times today saying there's equal amount genuine concern and genuine prejudice. But I think we also, when we're talking about this, elected representatives have to be aware, like the inbox in the journal where I work when we write immigration stories, like you cannot deny the absolute prejudice and racism that is within, and I'm sure
and
you're the same in the text.
And the same would be true in this talk, absolutely.
And I think elected representatives, when they're talking to their communities,
we have to
allow for that as well.
When we
read
out the text and the WhatsApps, we try to reflect the genuine concerns that some people have and avoid the prejudice.
Yeah, and then some of the genuine concerns get mixed up. Yeah. Like one of the big things in Newtown Mount Kennedy where people don't want 100, there was very little said about resources or anything like that. A lot of it was we don't want 160 men doing nothing. So one of the problems we have there is lots of people would like to see asylum seekers being allowed work earlier, allowed get driving license earlier, so there isn't a lot of this standing around doing nothing, you know, getting disenfranchised or bored. Most of the people who come want to, we were talking to someone yesterday who was an architect who wants to work. So, but if you do that, then the government will say it's too enticing for people if we allow them work straight away.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point, Sinead. And we did change the rules that if you're here for 6 months, you can work. I'm on the record saying I think we should be reduced. In my previous role as Minister for Enterprise, I would have looked after the work permit system. I know how much this state relies on inward migration to not just run our economy, but run our society. And I go back to the point, though, that somehow that we don't have a plan. When we've hired an extra 6,000 people into our healthcare, when we have accommodated 100,000 human beings, there is a plan. But no one says international protection has gone up incrementally. It's trebled. You know, it's gone from about 5,000 last year, 13,000 this year, we'll see 20,000. That's a significant amount of people that need to be processed and looked after. And that's why we've tripled the resources to increase processing, why we've tripled the people going out. It's not like we're doing nothing and this has happened overnight, like some of the rhetoric. This is a very real
issue
across the continent.
We had much ado about changing the law and emergency provision to make sure that the UK would not be designated an unsafe country. But it turned out that under the agreement, which is there, and which both Sunak and the Taoiseach acknowledges there, nobody had ever been sent back under it. So, I mean, what was that much ado about? Nothing. A bit of legal flurry for no purpose.
No, because it only became relevant that there was a challenge in the High Court that was resolved only in March of this year. That's something that has been resolved now. Again, this goes back to the British government politically are trying to use their relationship with France, which is a totally different situation. Yes, they left the EU, they leave the common relationship here. We have a common travel agreement that goes back to 1923 and the importance thereof. And we have to make sure it activates. And that's why Helen McEntee is engaging, despite what some people have said, with the Northern Executive, with her counterpart, Naomi Long, consistently to make sure that this is fit for purpose.
Pat, can I just add a stat from Dermot Farrador's piece today as well? Just there is obviously some engagement between the authorities. Between 2013 and 2022, about 2,800 people trying to enter Ireland by land were refused entry. So there are some checks. And
so
if you get a bus...
What was that mechanism?
Well, I think this is all part of... Like, we have been quiet about mechanisms within the CTA since it was brought in 1922 by a different name. Like, we have always been quiet.
Do you think buses were being stopped? Well,
buses are being stopped. If you get a bus to or from places in Northern Ireland, you often get stopped. And people come in. There can't be racial profiling. So people do get asked for ID, but the problem is you don't have to carry ID. So, you know, what are you going to do? And they can't, and they shouldn't racially profile people.
That's kind of an intractable thing because you don't have to carry ID. And if you pick out, you know, a black face in the bus and when there are 50 white faces, you will be accused rightly of racial profiling.
And sure, as somebody who lived in the north for 11 years, the buses weren't necessarily stopped on the border, but they were stopped somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
And people of different ethnicities and colours were removed. Let me, though, I want to go back and disagree with one thing Sinead said, because many of us have actually been saying exactly what I'm saying, not just over the last year or two, but for a very, very long period of time. I mean, one of the, for example, challenges at the moment in the direct provision system is that there are over 6,000 men, women and children who have got the refugee status. They have a legal right to remain in the country and they are stuck, trapped in direct provision. They don't want to be there, but they can't transition out into the mainstream housing system. I started raising this issue back in 2018 when there was 800 men, women and children. There's now over 6,000. And this is part of the difficulty, is that when people do raise these issues in a sensible and compassionate manner and urge government to try and address that, very, very little happens. And if we were able to find, adequate mainstream housing, for example, for those people in the private rental sector, that would free up a lot of capacity within the direct provision system, but the direct provision system itself is not fit for purpose because the quality of the accommodation is far, far too poor because the government is over-reliant on a poor private sector model rather than direct state provision.
Yeah, but direct state provision, poor, what it's really about is capacity. That's why we build 32,500 homes next year, while we'll be build 40,000 this year. And again, this is not unique to Ireland. This is the exact same in France, the Netherlands, Belgium. The challenges are the same. It's how we respond to it compassionately, humanely and efficiently with actual plans, not just giving out about plans.
We would leave it there, but no doubt we'll have much more to say about this in programmes in the weeks to come. My thanks to Ona Brin of Sinn Féin, to Neil Richmond, Minister of State, and my thanks to Sinead O'Carroll, editor of thejournal.ie. That's all we have time for.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.